I'm going to ruin him, just like I ruined that magician's act. People, this man drives a Saturn.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Taylor Hughes, thank you for filling in for Simon Cornell on Two Magicians,
Thanks
One Mic.
Thanks for having me.
You got a great podcast called About to Break. You got like a bajillion episodes out. I'm so lazy, I can't even do one a month.
I know the second I don't do one every week, I'm just going to stop altogether. Mm-hmm. So I just tell myself, I'm going to put one out this week and then see what happens.
You'll just assume you're ready to go, and then you realize your co-host, Simon Cornell, is stuck in China and can't record with you remotely because China doesn't have good Wi-Fi / the government is controlling everything he says. So
I was going to say they're probably listening the whole time.
I'm sure they've listened to every single episode of the Macau Sessions, and good for them.
Yeah.
That's why they've restricted visas coming into Macau. It's probably because of us.
That's the reason House of Magic shut down.
Among other reasons. We won't go there. But thank you so much.
We're off to a roll.
Yes. Thank you for doing this podcast. So the last time you kind of had me on your podcast and we released both episodes, but I didn't really do much. It was just me yapping the whole time about myself. So I figured this would be a good excuse to interview you and your background and all the crazy things that you do, because you have your finger in so many pies. In a good way. You're just doing so many things.
I'm trying. I've found that in this business, one thing usually doesn't keep you busy enough to not go crazy.
Yeah, I'm finding that right now as I go into my slow season of the summer. Just nonstop busyness all of April and then just slowing down. The train's coming to a halt.
It's so scary, man. I don't think there's a scarier thing than an empty calendar. And I look a couple months ahead and go, all right, it's always worked out so far, but right now it's a little, I'm having a little freak out.
Yeah, I mean, I got stuff in December booked. My December is set.
You should see my April 2019.
Which, like, right now doesn't feel like real money, but when you get there, like when I booked the castle, when I did the castle with Scott 2 weeks ago, booked that like December, November of last year, and I was like, yeah, that's never gonna happen, and then it happens, you're like, this is great.
I have right now, we were talking about this the other day, I have like three huge possibilities that will probably not happen. You know, they're those those opportunities that come up that you get super stoked about, and any one of them could give me peace of mind for a couple months, but they're probably not gonna go through.
Yeah, it's always the stuff that, like, we were talking about that. I think you were telling me about this the other day. It's always the stuff that comes, you get this email, and it's worded as if you are booked. This is happening. And,
oh, yeah.
And then I think in your case, you said that they're like, all right, we're talking to some other magicians. We'll let you know.
Yes. It's funny. So I just, that same gig, it's a possible, like, 2 week run at this one venue that I won't name, but, it would be great, and it's in the summer when I don't really have anything going on. And today they were supposed to let me know if they booked me or not. And they just emailed me and were like, "Hey, we haven't forgot about you. We're still gonna get back to you about this summer, but next spring we have this other event." and they want me to want to know what I think about doing this other event. And I'm like, "Please just book me now for this one, please. Let's do that.
I like money now."
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, Scott Pepper and I are working on this like mini touring illusion show, kind of a version of what we a longer version of what we did at the castle in.
It was so fun, by the way, guys. If you didn't see Nick and Scott at the castle, it was a blast.
But we have a few things booked, but it's like you said, January 2019. We got 3 days in Michigan booked, and it's great. Those three days are gonna kill. But it's like,
if we stay alive that long.
And say with Disney, I just got off a Disney ship and I looked at my calendar. I'm like, oh, I'm not on there again till December. So it's like, all right. That's just how it goes. But it's You get in this groove of just like, oh, I'm so busy, everything's great, I'm killing it in my career, and then just it comes to a halt.
Right. Well, and I've never done ships, but from what I've heard, it's funny because if they offer you a gig and you don't take that week, then you're kind of hoping they offer you another one.
Yeah, especially
but then
if
you could be doing.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, but then if you know you could do like a whole summer, and they've got you going nonstop, and then it's radio silence on their end. You know?
Yeah, and the other tough thing about just going away for gigs is you come back, like when I got back from China, it was just, you know, pulling out the shovel and re-digging some holes because everybody essentially forgets
right.
about you because you're not in L.A. anymore.
Yep. Yeah, it's a weird business, which is what we talk about all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just, we should just rename both of our podcasts to "Hey, It's a Weird Business" with a guy with his hands up in the air.
Yeah. Welcome to Sad Magicians. It's great though. It's yeah. great a lot of the time.
Yeah,
and I think that's why we get bummed when it's not. We just want to do that more. It's like it's the greatest thing in the world when you get to do it, and then when you don't get to do it, you're just kind of bummed you're not. So
yeah, and I'm working on a lot of like Zen stuff in terms of like. Yeah. I heard Bradley Whitford talk about this on WTF podcast. And once again, I'm just really good at relaying information from other people's podcasts.
Right.
But he was saying there is a danger in having your self-esteem rely on your career. So I'm trying to take this moment now as things slow down and I start to freak out of going, all right, it's going to be fine. And then just focusing on like things that should be influencing your happiness, you know, like your family and you know your life
totally,
and not entertaining strangers. So
right. Yeah, Katie was laughing at me because I had a bunch of stuff I was working on. I was doing a lot of shows locally around, so my mind was distracted. And then like 3 days ago I sat down and I'm like I need to get through all these emails I got. You know, so much stuff I need to reach out to people on, and I did it. And then I looked at my account, and there was like 4 emails still in my inbox, and that was it. And then I freaked out because I was like, I've literally done everything I can do to get booked, and now I just need to be okay not being frantic.
Yeah. I mean, it's just weird, sent man. Out a massive email blast, and the thing you don't want to do is look and see who unsubscribed.
You're like, wait a minute, that was someone who booked me.
My favorite person that unsubscribed was a grad student from USC or one of the universities nearby. I forget where she was from.
Okay.
I did like a 40-minute Skype interview with her. She's working on some thesis, some project, and she's been working on it for 2 years, and she reached out to me and has been talking to lots of magicians, and I had a great conversation with her about magic and all these different things. And then I'm like, oh, she's one of the people that unsubscribed. I did this thing for free for you, and you don't even want to see pictures of me with my wife and my dogs performing. I get it.
Maybe she got a bad report on the bad grade on the project.
Maybe.
And she's just like hurt.
Or maybe she just like looked at her notes and went, yeah, I can't use any of that.
Please.
So I real quick, I should plug this other podcast I was on. I was on the Monday Club podcast with these two gentlemen. One's in Texas, one's in Jersey, I think. Jersey or New York. Great guys. If they interviewed me and talked to me, and if you want to hear me talk more about myself, check it
out.
Yes,
I will definitely. I'm such a fiend for podcasts, man. They really, traveling by yourself is so lonely that it's just helpful to hear other voices sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
so
we talked about this
I'll
last
to that,
time you run
the
too.
Monday Club.
Yeah,
what did we not talk about last time, Nick?
I don't know. Oh, I have some notes.
Like,
I'm gonna try to interview you. Like I said, it was all about me last time. So
that's because it was you were on my podcast and it was the Nick Paul episode.
But it was supposed to be like a joint release episode, which we did. I released it on my podcast too, and it just still ended up me talking about myself, and people are just sick of me.
It's hard.
I'm sick of me talking about myself.
Please, it is kind of hard when you have two hosts and you're trying to figure out, all right, who's who's leading the, who's supposed to say words when.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, we should. I would like to. I was writing a blog post on this, and oh yeah, that's something else. I'm like, I'm going to put a blog post out every Monday, and I'm already behind on that. But I did technically write it, and I wrote it about the show we did last Tuesday. You and Chipper had a great idea of just doing a new material show. Would you like to comment on that experience from last week?
Yeah, so well, I'll start with with my podcast, I got a monthly, like a residency spot at the Clubhouse, which is a little community theater in LA. And really cool, kind of like you could do whatever you want. The first two shows I did, hardly anybody showed up. The second show that I did, I had two performers booked, and then I had like five other performers show up, but the audience consisted just of performers. So we were like, it like kind of last minute just turned into a jam session. It was like, everyone's going to come up and everyone's going to do something, and then we're going to go eat pie. And it was really freaking fun. And so I just decided, what if we just book it that way, where the whole intention is guys who are working all the time, who maybe don't want to try out something new in a corporate environment, or even like doing Booby Trap or something in LA when you've only got 4 minutes, I always wrestle with, is that the place to try out something new when you can't really put it in the middle, you know, in the middle of something strong? And so, so we called it the Low Bar Variety Hour, and I had a good little audience turn up and had a bunch of killer acts, and everybody got up and did something new, and it was so freaking fun. Mm-hmm. I was shocked at how fun it was.
Yeah.
Nick did a couple pieces that were fantastic, and then we still went out and ate pie.
You know, we went to a place called the House of Pie after. Didn't get pie.
Yeah. I didn't get pie.
I'm very mad at myself because I saw Chipper. He got pie. It looked delicious. But yeah, people
you
showed
got the
up.
Roasted chicken,
which I was the best fried chicken I've ever had. So if you're ever in LA, go to the House of Pie. This has nothing to do with entertainment,
right?
But no, yeah, the show was a great experience in that it was a safe space to try out new things, or to, like in my case, I reworked a couple things that I had been doing on and off, and definitely like my C material that has to go in a ship show. That, you know, because you need 245 minutes, so it's like I have to do this material, I don't have a choice, but I don't want it to be bad, I want it to be good. So it's great to have that space to try and hopefully not fail, but even if you do fail, it's fine.
Yeah, it was really the audience is very supportive too. I mean, everyone did a great job, but it was also, it's something kind of special when you say, look, these guys are all pros, but we're all doing stuff brand new, and we're just going to have fun. Mm-hmm. It was really cool. So, yeah, I'm working on next one will be May 22nd, if I could plug that.
I will be there.
May 27th, Tuesday night at the Clubhouse.
27th or 22nd?
22nd, yeah.
Okay, 22. 22nd I am in town. The week after I am not.
Oh, awesome.
Good.
It's going to be a Tuesday night.
Check it out. And put it on your calendars. It's a free show. It's a free show in LA.
It's a free show. Free show, free parking in the sketchy parking lot.
It's right next to a Rite Aid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I didn't even know existed anymore. After.
I know, man. They do that Thrifty's ice cream there, though. That's a pretty good reason to go to Rite Aid.
I'll deal with the sketchiness just for the ice cream.
Right? Yeah, I was just this morning reaching out to some other folks about coming out and performing, too. So I know Rob the Bloom guy is going to come out. He's going to do some stuff. And Matt McCarthy, great stand-up comedian.
Oh,
Matt McCarthy,
so that was a great interview on your podcast. He was just just on Conan.
Oh my gosh, he's a beast.
He's everywhere.
He's a beast. He's one of those guys that like you say Matt McCarthy and people go, I don't know if I know him, and then you see him and you're like, oh, I've seen him in like every commercial.
Mm-hmm.
He does all the stuff.
One of my favorite
Matt's gonna be there. And
oh, sorry, I'm cutting you off, but I don't want to forget. One of my favorite things I ever saw him do was. At the Rest in Peace Nerdist showroom, one of the other stand-ups had their little dog with him. So he walks out on stage with the dog in his hoodie, and the head's just like popping out of the top zipper. It's like a little Italian greyhound or something, and he's just trying to like do his set without really acknowledging that there's a dog there. But keeps like making fantastic. Offhanded dog puns. It was amazing. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
That's one of the things I do love about LA is I literally this morning I text Matt and was like, hey, man, I'm doing a new material show in a sketchy parking lot. Do you want to come? And he's like, yes, I do. That's fun. Yeah, a horse, a spoon, and a bucket are going to be there.
Oh, they're.
I think it's a horse, a spoon, a bucket.
Mm-hmm. I've seen them at Booby Trap sometimes. Their songs get stuck in my head.
This is so fun. I know, I'm a grown man walking around singing vegetables and peanut butter.
Yeah, they're one of those unique variety acts around town, musical acts.
Yeah, so fun. So come on out if you guys are around.
Let's see here. I had some notes I was going to ask you, and I feel like we just blew through all of them.
I can speak slowly, or we can elaborate.
Oh, what are we at? 18 minutes? All right, thanks for checking in.
All right,
in.
Guys.
We did it. If I hit 45, I'm thrilled. We did new material. We didn't get too much into your history of getting into magic. I don't know if that's something you want to talk about, or if you're something you're sick about talking
about
but to me,
want.
It's fascinating.
No, I'm not sick. Nobody asked me these things, so I'm not sick of talking about it.
Let's talk about you.
Yeah. I mean, classic story, I think, if I had a magician at my birthday party. But the difference was he was my stepdad's best friend in college. They were roommates. And he was a stand-up comedian who started off doing magic and then moved into stand-up. So he was just the cool guy around the house. He would come to, you know, get-togethers and pizza night, and my family would play cards with him. And he was doing stand-up, and my mom asked him, would you come do a show for Taylor's 7th birthday party? And he's like, I can't do seven-year-old stand-up. Like, I can't do it. So he pulled out like his old magic trunk, put on this show, and I was just freaking hooked. And I couldn't believe it. I was, up until that moment, I was convinced I wanted to do special effects in the movies. And then I saw this guy doing what looked like special effects right in front of me, and I was just like, I want to do this. And yeah, man. And then I got hooked doing it. Was in the junior group at the castle when I was 17, got in there and got to do some fun stuff with that, Future Stars, and met Gay Blackstone and found out that their warehouse, the Blackstone warehouse, was 3 blocks from my house in Azusa. So after Harry passed away, I'd go over there and help her set up props for video shoots and things like that. And yeah, man, I've just always been a magic geek.
Interesting.
Never did. I tried sports. I played football my freshman year, and I still don't know all the rules of the game.
I don't either. I watch it with other strong men, and I was like, yeah, they threw the ball. They caught it.
They did the thing. We are so excited about this right now. My daughters are playing sports now, and Saturday we were at my daughter's basketball game, and my wife would ask me, like, what happened there? And I'm like, I really don't know. Like, my 12-year-old knows more about sports than I do.
The referee blew the whistle. Obviously something happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I don't know why they do hand motions. You know, I would think, you know, I guess it makes sense if you know what the hand motions are, but they don't ever have a lesson. Like, there's no here's what the sign language of basketball is.
I think they're just all failed interpreters and went into sports.
That's what it is, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to be a professional interpreter, but they can't. They're like, you can have soccer. kids soccer. 6 to 8 year olds.
Even the deaf people in the audience are like, I don't know what he said. I have no clue. but you do a lot of the corporate scene, traveling, doing the MCs, and then you're also producing your podcast. I don't know if you want to talk about this, but you're starting work on a local kind of bar magic type thing up in Upland.
So
I did the magic bar on Monday, and it was a great experience. And I think it'll be super exciting once yours starts going.
Yeah, I had been on my podcast and got to go see Magic Bar, and it was so rad. And Magic Bar, for those of you who haven't been, it features close-up magic in a bar setting, but it's really rad the way they do it. I mean, they set up kind of like 2 rows of chairs at the bar, so you're really close, and they're serving drinks, and they're doing the close-up right there. And I've wanted to do, I think ever since I heard about, is it Cohen in New York who does his, like, he does his, like, chamber magic thing? It's like a pop-up parlor magic show. And I've always liked that idea of, what if you took and created, like, a theater-type environment in different venues? And so, kind of like what Ben's doing with close-up, I want to do with parlor magic. And we've got a venue here in Upland that we did a show at. You did a show with me. It's like a little bar and grill. But they have this back room that's got a separate bar and a separate entrance. And they basically said we could do whatever we want there. So I think this summer, when I'm not so busy, I'm going to try it out. Do a little parlor type show, bring out some different acts each week and kind of make it a little vibey place. We'll see if we can do it. There's not much out this side of LA that people can go to without driving to Pasadena or LA. So mm-hmm. It'll be an experience. Could fail miserably, but you know, I'm used to trying things that lose lots of money. That's
you are the Walt Disney of magic.
Well, he eventually got successful, I think.
Well, I mean, he had Roy Disney, who was the money guy, but literally every time they made money, it would just go back out the door. You know, they'd make money from Cinderella. It's like, okay, we're going to go build Disneyland now, and it costs millions of dollars.
You know, it's funny, though. Like, I mean, I complain a lot about where I'm at. I'm very, very grateful that I'm working enough to, like, pay our bills. And certain months are tight and things like that. But this is, you know, to do magic full time and it's all I do, I'm very grateful for it. And I'm trying to, I mean, kind of like you were talking about Zen philosophy stuff, trying to get in a space where I'm not always looking ahead to what the next thing is, but can enjoy the moment that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard sometimes in what we do that we're always kind of feel this pressure that if we don't have some big project we're doing that we're failing, and it's like, no, we're doing the thing. We're doing it. We're doing it right now.
I'm constantly trying to remind myself of that. And I just love, like, the second, and I'm sure it's like this for all other performers, the second that, of course an email comes in, leave me alone, email. The second that, like, things slow down, all of a sudden on your social media feed, everybody else is doing something amazing. And that's great. Right, and right, there's no judgments against that. And there's no ego against that. But it's just, it really messes with your perception and your mental health, I think, of just like, oh, mm-hmm. why they're successful now. And people say that to me all the time, too. They'll come up and say, oh, you're killing it. You know, I can't believe you're doing this and doing this. And guys that are, you know, very successful magician friends of mine who do amazing things are saying that. So it's just, I think you have to watch how much you go on social media and how much you absorb what other people are doing, because we're all essentially in the same boat.
Yeah, man. And it's, we got to remember too, you would think that magicians who have spent their whole life studying deception and illusion would be better at deciphering what's really going on social media.
That's a great line. That's a keeper.
Like, we spend every ounce of our energy trying to figure out how deception works in a way to entertain people. And yet we fall prey to it. Like, we're so fooled. But social media is like the biggest illusion of anything, man. Mm-hmm. Nobody posts anything that is real. You know, everybody that's sharing stuff, it's like, we've all been in places and you see someone taking a selfie and you see what it looks like when they're taking the selfie. And then they're checking it and going, no, I didn't get it. And then, like, they put on this face and they do their duck lips and it's like, they crop out everything that's going around that's not cool. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's, and yet we look at that and we go, crap, I'm not booking that gig or I'm not doing this. And, you know, we feel bad because someone else is working some show and it seems so glamorous. And then you realize it cost them $40 to drive there and park and they didn't get paid, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple certain touring shows that friends of mine are doing that on paper look amazing, and then they tell me what they're making. I was like, oh, and, like, you know, traveling nonstop and doing it, it's like, oh, it's not as glamorous as it appears. And
right,
I mean, there's,
I thought about that way before like doing fly dates, you know, like when I would see guys traveling across the country to perform, and I thought, man, that's so stinking cool, and I hope to do that one day. And it's like, now I think last year I did 26 different states, which is a ton for me. And at the same time, the travel is not fun. It's not, it's not enjoyable. You're not vacationing. Like, you're just using every bit of energy just to get to the gig,
mm-hmm.
you know? And yet I know, and I'm intentional, like, I'll post it, 'cause I know that other clients will look at that and go, oh, he's working, we should have him work.
Totally.
You know, but then I know that, you know, other guys will look at that and think it's a cooler thing than it really is. And that's not why I do it. But I have to remind myself when I see someone else's feed, mm-hmm. not to go like, oh, man, he's going to New York for the night.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I try to post like honest photos, too, of.
Right.
I did one a couple weeks ago of just like slumped over in a chair looking terrible in an airport of like. Living the glamorous life, or, you know,
right.
big travel day, because that's, oh, yeah. and I think Jeff Civilico, another great interview on your podcast, he's like, I love that photo because that's how I feel every single time.
Oh, yeah. It's the reality versus what gets posted is so funny. So I love that you do that because it's, you know, it's a reminder to all of us that like, hey, don't always wish you were somewhere you're not.
I will say last week, 2 weeks ago now? Yeah, almost 2 weeks. I got off a ship in Jamaica and flew to Miami and then back to LA. And, you know, that's like a 13, 14-hour travel day altogether. And it was the first time it didn't, like, really kick me in the butt where, like, my body is finally. But now that I say that, I don't have any ships for a couple months now. So it's like just when I'm finally building up a tolerance to traveling like a crazy man.
Yeah, you do get in a rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like what my buddy Keith calls it. I think he calls it road rust. Like when you're not traveling that much, and then you go back out on the first trip, and you're like, oh, I forgot how to do this. Like, I mean even walking through TSA, I have a full on routine I do with. It's like, here's the point in the airport when I take out my ID. And here's when I put my wallet in my front zipper of my backpack.
Yep.
And here's when I take the TSA lock off of my carry-on so that it's not, you know. And then, you know, it's just funny those moments when you do something really stupid because you're like, oh, I should know better.
I didn't realize how much of a travel jerk I am to travel with until I travel with a few friends of mine who are, you know, they travel, but not regular travels like we are. We're just going to Vegas, you know, quick, easy trip, but I'm TSA pre and they go through their line and I'm like, all right, see you later. And I just bolted through and I waited for them for probably 15, 20 minutes. And I'm like, oh, that was probably not the best thing to do. But,
if you have the pre-check and you don't use it, they will yell at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got yelled at once for having it. This was before Katie got her pre-check. And I went in the line with her because I'm like, I'm going to be a good husband. And the TSA lady went off on me. She's like, why would you have it? Don't use it. You got to go. It's like, it's just going crazy on me.
I like that the TSA either cares so much about every little detail or like there's one or the other. Or they could care less about you, about what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
I am still convinced that LAX TSA is, I don't know, the greatest or the worst in that you can probably have anything going in your bag through the scanner and they're not looking at all. Because I'll come back from other places and all of a sudden it's an issue.
Oh, my goodness. I've learned a trick. If you want to get through TSA, bring a jar of jelly beans in your carry-on. Like if you have something else you don't want them to look at, just put a jar of jelly beans in there because... Before I started doing this jelly bean trick, last year I started doing it, they would pull everything in my bag out. I mean, I have a pair of handcuffs and I've got my audio ape that's in a case. It literally looks like a bomb with a remote on it and an antenna. And they would, you know, they'd take all this stuff out of my case, just, you know, metal pipes and all sorts of stuff I travel with. And then as soon as I put the jar of jelly beans in there, that's all they care about. They look at the jelly beans, they put it back in, and you're off. I just think it's hilarious that all of a sudden those dangerous things don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Because something looks weirder.
They gotta keep moving, keep pushing people through. Mm-hmm. I think this is something we were talking about. I'm not 100% sure, but this... of knowing, like, especially when you do corporates and if I do ships, like, I'm getting better at knowing, like, what needs to be changed in the show to make it more palatable for less, quote-unquote, sophisticated audiences. And that sounds pretentious, and it's not meant to be. It's more so just for people that see a lot of live entertainment and people that don't. There's been a few changes I've had to make in my ship show that I'm like, oh, that, like, I do a bit with a puppet and it's like, it just bombs every time.
Isn't that that's funny? It just doesn't work on the ship.
It just does. I probably have to take it out. And like here in LA, it kills.
That's But it's funny. Yeah. I this is something that I think guys that talk about wanting to do corporates don't, and I guess you, if you haven't done it, you don't really understand what's happening, but it's a very selfless thing if you're going to do it well. If that makes any sense. Like, I feel like it's, if you want to succeed in corporate, you can't roll into a corporate environment and go, well, this is my show and this is what I do and it's all about me and people are going to leave talking about how great it was. The guys I've seen that do the best in a corporate environment understand the purpose of that event, whether it's a conference of salesmen and they want them to get pumped up for the next year, or it is an appreciation for the, you know, the volunteers of a certain organization, or it is a product launch and they want everyone to be thinking about this new product. If you know the purpose of the event and you can tweak your show, not only to support what they're trying to do, but also take out anything that is drawing too much attention to you as the performer and put instead putting it on the audience or the CEO or the organization, then you'll work corporates forever if that's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. But like, I feel like, and that's probably one of my biggest challenges with it, is I work full time doing magic for people who didn't come to see a show and don't know who I am. Mm-hmm. But if you want to work corporates, I do think you have to tweak your show, not just once, but like per audience, you know, like, I always have probably four or five different things that I'm not planning to do ready to go in case I'm in the middle of the show and go, this isn't going to work and I can put something else in. You know, everything from, you know, you plan it. Maybe you have a routine that normally you use a lady from the audience for, and you show up and it's all men. Like, you know, it's a corporate that's just all a bunch of sales guys. And you go, well, that piece isn't going to work, you know, because it's more of a fun, lighthearted, emotional piece. And if I bring up this construction worker, it's not going to work. So, yeah, I don't know if that's what you were hinting at, but I think that, being able to tailor your show to the audience will always help you get rebooked.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen guys who kill at the castle bomb in corporate environments.
Yeah. Because,
you know, it's difference between an audience who's coming to see a magic show and they say you're performing and they go, wow, let's see this guy, versus they came to their sales meeting and they're getting surprised while they eat chicken. You have to work differently to be able to still do a good show, I think, in that kind of setting.
Yeah, that's one of the fascinating things about the castle, is that you can see somebody just destroy, and then you go work with them at a real world gig, you know. If you're a professional, a gig that you do more often than a place like the castle.
I think it's important to try different shows than you would normally do. I mean, Chipper was just talking about this on the episode I did with him, but you've got to try different types of performances so that you can figure out what works for different groups and how you can present it differently. Because I did the opposite. I was doing so many corporates that I realized my act sucked for anything other than corporate.
Hmm.
And I got booked one night to do a show at a VFW hall in Whittier. Because I only book the big gigs. And it was like a fundraiser for the city. And they booked me to do comedy magic. And they booked Melissa Villaseñor, who's now on SNL. And this was 3 months before she joined the cast. And so we're doing the show. And that night, it was like a corporate audience. And I did really good. And she came out and just did the best impressions and hilarious comedy. And it was relevant. And it was like, so now... And no response. And I went home so sad that they liked me. Because I was like, here's someone who's like doing relevant, brilliant stuff that is like, you know, it's it matters. It means something. And then I'm doing stuff that's so tailored for an audience that doesn't understand what is happening in the world. And that was the night that I was like, I need to start tweaking what I do so that I can do some of these venues that I'd rather do. But I can't go up there with like just a normal corporate-y
you know
show.
What? I saw something that was kind of revolutionary, like almost backtracking on this idea. I was working with Marcus Monroe, who's a really funny juggler out of New York area, and he was on the ship as well. And he's essentially doing alt comedy for cruise ship guests and killing and destroying. And it was kind of eye-opening to me because I'd been doing ships for like 3 years now, and I'm the only real comedy you see is kind of the more flat stuff or the more, I don't know, mainstream style that would appease everybody. And this kid's just running around doing crazy one-liners, doing bits to music, in character as this kind of strange guy, but in a very clever, funny way. And I told him, like, I'm just so happy. Like, this should be not working. You should be failing right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is meant to be a compliment, and you're not. You're destroying. And so there is room for alt entertainment, for our weirder, the weirder type stuff we do to work in those settings. I really believe that.
Right.
But I think you just have to know what stuff needs to be tweaked and what stuff doesn't.
Yeah. And I think making sure that you are presenting who you are and the audience gets to know you. I found that if I do a good job establishing here's who I am and allowing them to get to meet me, I know that if they like me, I can do whatever I want. Do you know what I'm saying? Like a lot of performers, they don't tell anything that's personal or share any connection where the audience goes, I feel like I know this guy. And if we can get to that point with an audience, then I think you can play more and you can be a little more even edgy in a corporate environment because you've established this trust of like, hey, we know, you know, this guy isn't just some stranger.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that I want to go have a beer with after the show, you know?
Yeah, that's been the biggest drawback of my silent stuff I'm learning. I've been doing a lot of talking in the past couple weeks in shows, and it's just... In talking, like I did the bar magic show, and I did a newer piece that I wrote about like how I got into magic and about my dad, and you just see the audience change in their perception of you and the way they ask questions or the way everything else follows that. It's kind of been just like this amazing breakthrough because it's something I've resisted for such a long time because I'm like, I want the audience to see a character. I don't want them to see me. But you have to humanize that character. So even if a story is true from my life, it's still a persona that I'm putting up on stage.
Right. Yeah, I'd love to see, because then you get to have that fun of like playing around with, okay, what happens if I open silently and then do talking where I share who I am? Versus what happens if I open up top with a piece that establishes who I am? How do they react differently to the silent stuff after that?
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating to see what, you know, the progression of how things change based on.
Yeah.
You know, just, it's like, how many people have you seen do the wake, lean, sawing in half? You know, Scott just did it, did a great job. But like the sawing where the lady gets tied to the table and you have the two volunteers there.
They literally did it three weeks in a row at the castle.
Yeah. And the thing that amazes me, I've seen a lot of people do it very well. I've never seen anyone get the reaction to that trick that Kaylin and Ginger get.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, and I think Kaylin even said it at the castle this time, people have to care about the person or they're not going to care that you're going to saw them in half.
Mm-hmm.
They have to really like, at that point in the show, people so feel like they know Ginger that they care whether or not she's okay. And the reaction is so different. And I think that, I don't know. I think sometimes as magicians, we can forget that like, just cause you can do a cool trick doesn't mean people are going to care to watch it. you know, but if you can connect with them on a personal level, then all of a sudden something that would be trivial before now has like all this meaning to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just going back to like the basics of storytelling and, yeah, it's just something I've thought a lot about of, but it's harder to achieve than you realize. But once you do like start, you know, breaking the ice there, it just transforms the performance, I think, in, yeah. in you know, it goes from being a magic show to, or a little show that we're watching to a life experience, you know, something that they're going to take with them and remember, you know. It's like Copperfield's snow piece, you know, everybody does a snow piece now, but you don't forget about, you know, him turning into a little kid, you know, him becoming him himself, even if that story is completely fabricated and you know, it didn't happen, still there's an element of truth there that we all buy into.
I think that for me, for years I would get so excited about the effect, you know, I'd get so like, I want to do this effect because of whatever happened when I saw that, it made me feel a certain way. And I had just assumed that if I did that same effect, it would make the audience feel the way I felt when I saw it. And then I would do it and be like, this didn't work, or it fell flat, or they got no response, or they laughed instead of being moved, or they were moved instead of laughing. I couldn't figure out what it was. And you realize that like the person really does make the difference, like that, like you're saying, whether you're telling a true story or you're telling a made up story, people connect to story. And we've got to somehow, I think, you know, at least this is something I've been on a kick for a while though, but like the storytelling element makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Your storytelling style is getting really good. I mean, always has been, but it's really starting to be what you're known for. And I think that's going to be your own unique angle, which is going to be great. I mean, it already is, but still.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I'm such a dork. I was like, so this is terrible. Harry Anderson just recently passed away, and I was gonna say something about Harry, and then I thought, when is this coming out? Like, anyway, it doesn't matter when it comes out. He's gone. We'll edit this out, right, Nick? No, we won't.
No, I'm leaving this in just for awkwardness.
Fantastic.
No, and I totally understand what you're saying. But yeah, he was amazing. Like, he will be greatly missed.
Oh my gosh. Harry just passed away. And I think whenever someone passes, you start to, we rightfully so reflect on them and like what they, you know, the moments that we remember about them. And I always connected with him. And I couldn't figure out why it was. Like whenever he did a trick, it was just like he would do a trick that someone else had done and it felt so different. And then I realized, like, going back and looking at every routine he is known for, there's a storytelling element to it, you know, and his character was so defined that everything he did was from that perspective of Harry the Hat. And I think the audience just right away was on board, because it's like, you know, if a guy was on the street doing a 3-card Monty, they would walk right past him. But they so cared about this guy and felt like he was on their side in it that he could do a 3-card Monty and get a totally different reaction than someone else. Anyway.
No, that's it. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. And if people are searching for, you know, why they aren't getting reactions or why something isn't working, it just comes down to that. It just comes down to, you know, how are you connecting with the audience? And I think that's something some performers miss. I think they are so focused, and I think we're lucky to bounce around on thoughts here, but we're lucky to be in a close, tight-knit group of magicians, especially at the castle, like friends of yours, friends of mine, where we're all pretty self-aware of what needs to happen to get better, what doesn't work in a show, what does work. And I do see a lot of guys who aren't full-timers who are missing the perception of the audience. They're so concerned about, you know, what they're doing. They're completely putting up a wall against how they're going to let the audience in. And I think that's where you, if you're, if you, hopefully you have the ability to see if something's working or something's not. I think that's the biggest gift I've been given as somebody who's very critical. And I'm guys like you and John and Simon and David, all these guys were like, we're all aware. David Stryker, sorry. we're all like able to be self-aware.
Yeah.
So I think if you're somebody who doesn't possess that ability, you should work on that. And, you know when something works and know when something doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good, man.
I don't know. It's just something I've been noticing a lot on, you know, either people posting or when I'm chatting with them. And it's just like, I keep thinking to myself, I'm like, man, you just don't get it. You are completely missing the mark here.
Right. Right. And I think it was Harry Anderson, maybe in like one of his Penguin lectures or something, but he was talking about like, you know, being aware of yourself and also being aware of the audience. And what is the effect that you're trying to do? What is he called it the conceit, but it was like, what is the storyline of that effect or the premise of that effect? So like with him, with the 3-card Monty, it wasn't. Most guys, when they do a 3-card Monty, it's like, hey, I'm smarter than you. You're going to lose. I'm going to win. That's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And they may never say that, but the way they present it, you know, because that's the way the pattern was in the instructions, it's I'm smarter than you. And, you know, it's the old Seinfeld joke of like, here's a coin. Now it's gone. You're a jerk. You know, mm-hmm. When Harry does it, and he talked about this in his lecture, it's never, I'm going to win, you're going to lose. He never says you lost or you got it wrong or anything like that. His entire premise is, isn't it fun to play? Hmm. Like, it doesn't matter if you win. It doesn't matter if you lose, the whole premise. And he never says this, playing is fun. And he's aware of that in everything he's doing in that routine. And afterward, that's what the audience feels. They don't feel like he was smarter than them or they got cheated out of something. And, yeah, I think you're right, man. You have to be aware of yourself, but you also have to be aware of what is it that you're wanting to leave the audience with in a given piece. How do you want them to feel afterward? And are you presenting and behaving in a way that's going to leave them with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. We're experts. We know all about this. So
we got it, guys. We got it locked down. That's why our summers are so packed. You and I, Nick.
We are so busy of going to the gym and thinking about shows that I wish I was doing. No, this is never a pointing fingers podcast, and that's why I've deleted so many early episodes of this podcast. I would probably, if I hadn't deleted them, I'd probably have over 90 or 100 episodes, which is nothing compared to your podcast because you're already there and you've been around a year.
No,
but
71, Nick.
70, cheese and crackers. But yeah, I deleted a lot of early episodes because I was giving advice from a point of somebody who hasn't like failed enough or hasn't gone through enough.
Oh, buddy.
But now I feel like we're getting, hopefully I get to a point where I can at least take the life experiences and make some sort of sense out of them. I don't know.
Yeah, man. And I think nobody's trying to act like we got it together. We're, if anything, we're trying to encourage ourselves. I mean, you know my backstory. I used to work at a church, man. I was a youth pastor for years. I spent a lot of time telling people how to do things that I never went through myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, that story's fascinating, and I won't make you go all the way into it, but I listened to an interview where you talked about it, and it was just, yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated by religion, and I'm fascinated from that element of human culture. So for you to translate that into something completely different is pretty wild.
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest takeaways for me in that is that because I did spend so long trying to help people do something that wasn't their journey. You know what I mean? Like I feel like my biggest takeaway in that whole thing, which there is a podcast that you can listen to about it if you want, but my whole takeaway with it was like, you can't live anyone else's life, you know, nor should we try to. And I think as performers, so often we're either trying to emulate someone else or do what worked for them. But, you know, this goes back to finding out who you are on stage and off stage and what do you want the audience to feel. that, you know, if you want to do something special, then freaking just be yourself, because, you know, everyone's trying to come up with a character that's unique and original, and then you get to meet people and you realize nobody's the same, and yet nobody wants to be themselves. We all want to come up with this, like, brilliant, I got to write this character that everyone's going to connect with and is going to have, you know, challenges and a flaw and, you know, great traits. And it's like, well, we all have that if we're just willing to, like, explore it in front of an audience. Anyway.
Yeah. And I keep going back to, you're absolutely right. I keep going back to the acting line of living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. And I keep going back to that for writing magic or writing new pieces or even just like trying to center myself on stage. You know, I did like a very drunken rowdy crowd at a show Saturday. And luckily it was like a cabaret variety show where I only have to do like 2 4-minute bits, so it's easy. But still, I just took the moment of, I go out there and I'm like, these people are just gone and very rowdy, but I made a point just to connect with them. And like, I went immediately up to somebody and did a bit with them and brought them in. And that's something I'm just now learning of, you know, just try your hardest to make that connection, even if it seems completely impossible at the time.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, because you got to realize you're in a room, and it's hard to sometimes realize in the moment, but you realize everyone's acting a certain way that may be weird to you, and you're like, this isn't how you act in theater, but they're all experiencing a certain reality. And if you can tap into that like you did on Saturday, then you're not against them or you're not an outsider. You're now part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and there's like a lead in the show who was really struggling with that and who's done the show for a long time, and was like, her tone became judgmental and it became uninviting. And we're backstage with some of the other performers who are just like, what? You're just killing it. You're killing the vibes here, because, yeah, they're drunk and they're rowdy, but you got to stay ahead of them. You got to stay on top of them. But you also can't become a dick about it. You know, you have to. And that, I mean, that goes to corporate events too. It's like, there are times when I'm just like, oh, I'm so done with you people. But I want to get paid, and ultimately I want to do a good job.
Right. Yeah.
I don't like walking out of somewhere and feeling like I didn't give it 100%.
That's another thing about the travel aspect people don't think. It's like, if you drove 20 minutes from your house and had a really shitty performance, then you've got a 20-minute drive to worry about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But if you traveled for 6 hours on a plane to the East Coast and you do a really crappy job, then you're flying home and you're taking Ubers and you're transferring planes, and that whole time you're going, man, that was awful.
Yeah, it's, I know exactly.
At least that's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Is there anything else? We're hitting like 55 minutes here. Is there anything you wanted to plug or?
Oh my goodness. No, if I could, probably just the podcast. It's my new favorite thing to do, other than work for money.
Well,
my favorite thing to do that costs me.
You got like sponsors now. You got like, it's becoming a real thing. I have no sponsors. Sometimes somebody gives us some money on our website, and that's nice of them.
Yeah, we've got we do a thing with Patreon where people can be a producer of the show, and it's fun because it's only like a buck or more a month, and then you can call yourself a producer, and I'll fill out a job resume for you or something like that, or like a reference letter.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, the podcast, I have lots of magicians on, but also just all different sorts of artists and entertainers, directors, actors, comedians. And the whole premise is the same thing that we talk about on this is that sometimes you're this close to a breakthrough and this close to a breakdown. So yeah, that's the About to Break podcast.
That is that your tagline? Do you have that on your website?
The tagline is artists and entertainers discussing the ups and downs of trying to break into the industry before it breaks them.
I like it. All good.
Yeah, that's fun.
Well,
thank
you for filling in for Simon, and thank you for being a good friend, and thank you for chatting and keeping busy.
Oh, buddy. Thank you, man. I so appreciate you, and you are a wonderful friend and an incredible host, and I'm grateful that I can never fill in for Simon, but I'm glad I could step in his absence.
Thank you for not doing an Australian accent too.
While he's making money.
He's on, like, his text today was, I think I can swing it. I'm going to some remote island in China. I'll let you know. And I just immediately went, yeah, that's not going to happen. We're not going to get this episode done in time. So thank
you. That's fantastic. You're like a little too laid back there, Simon.
It's more so my fault. It was supposed to be done, and we have some in the bank coming up. But this one, I wanted to talk to him, and this will be a teaser for the next episode. He is one of the only acts to be brought back to Penn and Teller Fool Us for them to say, we screwed up. We're going to give you the award. Right.
I saw that clip. That was insane.
And that son of a bitch, he didn't tell me anything about this. I found out through Twitter.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
See, I have this agreement with Penn and Teller where I send them clips twice a year. And then they go, that's great. Do you have anything better?
I love that you said that the other day to like some young aspiring magicians. And they both kind of looked at you funny, but I lost it. I was like, yep, story of my life for the past 5 years.
Yeah, it's the whole thing of like, we really like you, but we don't like any of the things you do.
No, the email I literally have is, yeah, we really like you, Nick. We just don't know what to do with you. And I appreciate the honesty. So.
Yeah, no, it's great. Well, and that show's amazing, too, because they've had so many acts on. They want it to be so different, but they're like, we had a guy 3 seasons ago do something with a piece of rope, so can't do anything with rope anymore.
So you couldn't be on. Sorry.
Yeah, right? Oh, my goodness. Good times.
Good times.
All right, Nick Paul.
Thank
you, buddy.
Thank you for doing this. And we'll be in touch soon. This is going to go up tomorrow because it's so last minute.
Oh, my goodness. This is going to go live as soon as we stop recording. It's going to be there.
It has been live. This has been streaming out live the whole time.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
The video, too? Should I be wearing pants?
No, that's okay. I told everyone specifically you would not be wearing pants, so it's fine.
Oh, okay, cool. Good.
All right, we should wrap this up. Thanks so much, buddy. I will talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, man.
Okay, bye.
Thank you for listening to Two Magicians, One Mic Podcasts. Please rate us on iTunes. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Visit our website, www.twomagiciansonemic.com. Send fan mail or hate mail to twomagiciansonemic@gmail.com. Have a great week.